Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to sit down with my new friend, Jake Cooper, the owner and operator of Rent Eboards right here in Houston. A good friend of mine, Brian Beck, has been trying to get me on a one wheel for years and recommended that I reach out to Jake as his business allows people just like me to rent and try all kinds of electric boards and scooters for a fraction of the price of what it costs to buy one. I reached out and 2 days later, we were sitting down in his shop to have this conversation. It ended up pouring rain that day, so I wasn't able to get out on a board. But after getting to know Jake, I'll absolutely be back to buy one from him as soon as I can. Thank you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. To join in the conversation, learn more about our guests, or to submit any questions you might have, you can find us on Instagram at Houston Made Podcast. Now listen in as Jake and I discuss how we went from working on spacesuits for NASA to buying a personal electric vehicle business, the pressure he felt in making that transition, and the amazing community he's found in his new industry. Jake Cooper.
How's it going?
Rent Eboards. We're here at your shop, at your store. What would you call this?
It's a bit of a garage shop, but I call it the shop. People come by and whatnot. And every time somebody steps in here, even though when they approach the house, they think, oh man, am I in the right place? And then as soon as they sort of step in, they're like, this is cool. Yeah. I've had people go as far to say, like, I just walk into a little paradise because we've basically taken this like hobby and turned it into like a business. Yeah. And so, everybody that sees this is like what they want. This is like their dream. They're like, this type of store doesn't exist yet. And so, we're sort of bringing that, and you can, it's just reassuring every time somebody comes in. We're like, oh, this is legit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, tell our listeners what Rent Eboards is.
So basically Rent Eboards, we're a network of independently owned and operated rental sales and services businesses for PEVs, personal electric vehicles. So the idea here is that we're trying to grow stronger together. That's sort of like the motto behind it, if you will, on the business front. So we have all these like independent businesses that are on these different cities, and we're not really competing with each other because we're offering, you know, a curated geographical service, like with rentals, you know, a place for people to come in for services and sales and that sort of stuff. And so we're not competing with each other. So if we work together and use the same branding and marketing, we can sort of grow stronger and we can have a bigger impact in that realm, and we can grow stronger together. So
yeah.
So that's what Rent Eboards is.
That's really cool. I pride myself on the fact that we have a pretty broad background of listeners.
Okay.
Can you explain to somebody who doesn't know what an e-board encompasses?
Sure. Yeah. So basically that term I hit on earlier, PEV, personal electric vehicles, that's everything from like the most popular and most well-known are probably like e-scooters and e-bikes. Those are two types. Our main focus is closer towards the like skateboard side of that, which is the electric longboards, and like the one wheel, which is a type of electric skateboard that basically looks like a little, like a seesaw that has a go-kart tire, and it's like a hub motor. And so that goes inside in the middle, and then you lean, and then it accelerates as you lean. And so you can go, and most of these go around, you know, give or take around 20 miles an hour. And so, yeah, there's just a bunch of different sort of types of boards. There's even like these electric unicycles where the wheel is in between your legs, and there's these two pedestals that you step each foot on each side. So the industry in a whole is like still its infancy. And even still, like, I've been doing this for 5 years and I still will ride around and people will head turn. They're like, what is that thing? Like, how is he moving?
Yeah.
So it's still like, there's a lot of space to grow into.
That's really cool. Okay. So you rent these boards, these electric boards and scooters and all that. You rent these out primarily here in Houston. And you said you've been doing it for 5 years. How did this whole thing start?
Yeah. So when I was, my background, I'm a mechanical engineer. So when I was in college studying mechanical engineering, I was already sort of interested in these things. And I went and got my first internship in college, and I was working as a mechanical designer. And I made a little bit of money, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to blow it on a boosted board because these things are sweet, right?
Yeah.
And so I pre-ordered a boosted board, and you know, once it came, I started riding around. I just sort of fell in love with it, and I was like, this is awesome. And then I was like, well, the barrier entry to these things is really high. Like they're over $1,000 for a board, like, whereas a skateboard is normally like $50, right? So like, it's a completely different realm. And so I was like, I want to share this passion with other people. So, you know, what can I do to sort of lower the barrier to entry to that market a little bit? And so I started to rent them out by the day and by the week and that sort of stuff to give people an idea. You know, there's two main types of customers. The first are people who, you know, want to try it before they buy it. So they're like, man, those things look really cool. Like, would I like this? Or am I about to waste like multiple thousands of dollars?
Yeah.
And so people will come, they'll try it out. They'll fall in love with it inevitably because like, how could you not? And then they'll end up wanting to buy one, that sort of stuff. The other type of customer is people who are already in the industry who have boards in different cities. And when they're traveling, because the battery size is often, more often than not, you can't even travel with your board. Mm. So their options are either to ship it, which is a lot of times unreliable and the dates aren't going to work out and that sort of stuff. Yeah. And it gets really expensive. Or to have a rental place there. And so we're trying to like build that network. And the more we grow, then people can come to us and like, oh man, they're in all these different cities. Like when I'm traveling, you know, I can just go to the same site. And so we'll have those sort of return customers to different parts of the city.
Yeah.
Different cities, parts of the country.
Yeah. That's really cool. How many boards do you start with? When you had the idea, you're like, I'm going to do this. What was that first few months process building into it all?
Yeah. So I basically, you know, I picked up two additional boosted boards. You know, this was back in 2017. So I had the one that I had pre-ordered, and then, you know, I got two more of them, and I basically just listed them online and sort of just started doing it. And it was just doing it on my car. I didn't have a storefront. I didn't have anything. I just, you know, hey, here, sign this waiver. Okay, here you go. Here's how you use it. And then here's a helmet. Have a good time. Yeah. And so that's sort of where we started. And then, you know, I started with three boards, and then I basically slowly, as the industry grew and as the business grew, just sort of grew into it and basically acquired new boards upon demand. But the second board, random fun fact, the second board I acquired, I actually bought used with Ethereum from somebody.
Whoa. Yeah.
So if you calculate it now, I probably overpaid for it, but that's not how it works.
At the time,
yeah, it's a good deal. But
so you had a couple of boards, you're renting them out of your car. You're posting online. Where were you posting it?
Yeah. So a little bit of history. Rent eBoards was actually already functioning in New York City at the time. That started back in like 2016. And then, you know, a year later, I basically came on board and I was like the first franchise.
Got it.
And so we were working on that. I was doing that. And so the online platform had already been set up and that sort of stuff. And I saw the advantages of like the network. And so I was sort of in on that. And then eventually, the guy who was running our New York franchise and location, he ended up moving on to other things in software, the software world. And he basically sold. I bought the company from him. And then I sort of kept those two companies separately and have been running those sort of simultaneously. And so one of them is my location here in Houston. And the other one is basically the branding, the marketing, the website, the name, that sort of stuff that we basically license out. So legally speaking, a more appropriate name for our locations are licensees, not franchisees.
Okay.
But from the customer's perspective, it's like
for
the
most
same.
For, yeah. For the lay people,
it's they look like the same thing.
They don't know. Licensees. Come on, people, get it together. So you're a mogul, essentially. You've got multiple businesses now that you're overseeing. I am fascinated in the licensee side of things because
sure.
So I, the very first episode that we launched here with Houston Made was Kathy Jones, who owns the Cypress location of Class 101, a college planning and student mentoring franchise. I think you and I spoke about that a little bit. And she essentially said, I want to be a business owner. I don't know what I want to do. And just started looking at franchises that she could buy into, found one that aligned with her, you know, her passions. And then she did that.
Right.
It wasn't until, I mean, I'm not kidding you, a month after that conversation that I realized that essentially as a realtor, I'm a franchise owner, essentially.
Right.
Yes, an independent contractor, but at least when I entered into Keller Williams, I was paying dues to be a part of this bigger
exactly.
brand.
Exactly.
It took me so long to realize that
you bought into a network.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Yep.
Okay. So you have 9 licensees, if you include yourself as
correct.
Houston. So you have Houston, Austin, Beaumont, DFW, Galveston, San Antonio. That's just in the great state of Texas, Texas forever. And then Destin, Florida, Nashville, Tennessee, and then San Diego, California. Right? So that's 9.
Yeah. So you can already see based geographically where my, and I hadn't really put a lot of effort into the expansion yet. And so that's actually what I've been focusing on these last 2 months. And so you can see a lot of that was just organic through Texas, because that's where I'm at and where my networks are. But as what I'm doing more and more is I'm traveling across the country to different like events and making more connections there and basically, you know, promoting and that sort of stuff. And we're getting, I'm sort of getting to the point right now where the tables are turning a little bit and people are coming to me instead of me going to them. Nice. And so right now I'm in this like middle zone of like where both of those things are happening. Like I'm still trying to like find people. And my goal is to find an industry leader in each city and basically convince them to start this business. Or if they already have a business they're sort of doing on the side, which is most of the cases.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's formalize this. Let's get you in the network. Let's do this. Right. And so that's a lot of what I'm sort of doing.
That's really cool. I want to point something out, and this is only because I was stalking your Instagram and like trying to like put some pieces together. How old are you?
How old do you think I am?
I think you graduated college in 2017, in December of 2017, I think. So I'm going to say 24.
I'm 25.
25. Yeah. That was close. Yeah,
class of 2018. Although I did graduate in 2019 from college. Okay. So I started this while I was sort of in college.
Got it.
The only reason I graduated that late is because I did 7 mechanical engineering internships when I was in college.
Yeah. And you graduated summa cum laude. Right?
4.0. Yeah.
No big deal. Whatever. I want to point out that because you are the youngest guest to date.
Oh, really?
On Houston Made.
Well, I'm honored.
I think that it is a testament to what you're building here. I don't know what it means. I don't know.
I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah. But I think that it's really cool because, you know, at 25, I was just graduating school too. Like I was getting my master's degree and like finishing up and had been a professional student forever. And all I had been doing is accruing student loan debt that I will carry to my grave. But you've built all of this somewhat out of a passion that you already have.
Completely out of a passion, pretty much, yeah.
And exactly. Now you've got these two different things. You're running the business here, and then you've got these licensees.
Yeah, and I'm actually, so a little bit more about my background. After I graduated, I ended up working full-time. The reason I'm here in Houston is because, you know, while I was in college, I was doing internships at Johnson Space Center at NASA here in Houston. And then I basically went there full time. And so for a year and a half, I worked full time as a mechanical design engineer for the NASA spacesuit project. And so that's like my full time job, if you will. June 1st, was the first day I basically was like, you know what? Like this industry is growing right now. Like things are happening. And there are a bunch of just, it's hard to like tangibilize what, like, if that's even a word, what it was that needed to happen. But there were a bunch of things that needed to happen. And I needed to basically, my roots were already strong and I had this advantage, but I needed to take advantage of it. Otherwise it was just going to be wasted. And so I went on a road trip, and on that road trip, I had too much time to think. And I essentially came to the conclusion that I was like, dude, I need to focus on this full time just for a bit, just to see what happens. And so I went to my boss and I was like, what are our sabbatical policies?
Yeah.
and I'm on a sabbatical right now. Essentially I'm on the last two, like through the end of this month. So June and July, unpaid leave, just sort of focusing the business. And I thought after that, you know, I'll probably go back full time, you know, keep working, that sort of stuff. Cause like I liked my job at NASA. It was cool. But it wasn't like what I was truly passionate about. And I felt so guilty about that too. Especially to my like dad, who was also a mechanical engineer, and, you know, I was privileged enough, you know, he was able to pay for college and that's my undergraduate at least. And I was like, man, you really invested all of this in me. And I work for a year, then I'm like, deuces, right? But both my parents were like super supportive. They're like, no, this is, you're using your degree, just not in the way you thought. So I basically, you know, took that time off. And now I've basically realized that if I go back, it's going to be in a part-time capacity. I've grown the business enough to where it requires at least part-time, at least half of my attention.
Yeah.
In terms of that. So it's sort of exciting, and I absolutely love it. I love the everyday. I love the, what people think of as like super tedious and obnoxious of a business. I will just like stare at QuickBooks for hours and like make sure all the numbers match. I'm like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
So it's like, I get so much excitement about just building something and just doing all aspects of it that I could never see myself like going back full time and committing all of my energy to something or somebody else. And maybe that's selfish, but
no, I think most people, well, I just posted a clip from one of my most recent interviews with James Samaniego, a tattoo artist. And he was making the point that he would rather have, you know, zero followers on Instagram and be able to do what he wants to do, why he wants to do it, than, you know, be slave to whatever. And I posted on Instagram a little poll of like, would you choose influence over freedom, or which one would you choose? And it was like 9% influence, 91% freedom.
Interesting.
And I made the point sharing those results that that wasn't surprising to me. I think most people of the millennial generation and younger would be like, absolutely freedom. I'll be poor and eat ramen and make some really good ramen if it means that I get to kind of do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Right. Right.
Then go do that. In your case, your go do that is building spacesuits for NASA.
Right. So it's not like I was slave to some like shitty 9-to-5 job. Like, it was cool. It was great. Like, sure, it was, sometimes it could be tedious, just like any job could be.
Yeah.
But, you know, every time you take a step back, you're like, damn, this is cool. Like we're doing this. Like, this will be this is the hardware that's going to like step foot on the moon next. Yeah. Like, that, this is what's, you know, it was cool. And so, yeah, it was more difficult to just sort of turn my back to that. I don't know. There was a point where I started to introduce myself to people, and when they asked what I do, I would exclude NASA completely, and I would just say that, oh, I run like an electric skateboard, you know, rental sales and services business.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like, oh, cool, and like, that's, you know, it was a completely different reaction.
People
ooh and ah over NASA, like, probably unnecessarily so. And then when I was like, I have my own business, like, I do this thing and it's amazing, I have this passion, and then they're like less ood and odd over what I think is like way cooler, and I'm just like, oh, okay,
sure. Oh, sure. I think that that's still the societal kind of perspective, right? Because I could imagine somebody being like, well, I'm a receptionist and I work at NASA and I make $45,000 a year. People are like, oh my God, NASA, you're answering phones, right? You're
right.
Patching people through. Maybe you're sending some emails. And then versus somebody who's making, let's say, $150,000 selling vinyl stickers on Etsy.
Right.
Right. And they'd be like, oh, I sell stickers on Etsy. And they'd be like, oh,
good for you.
Yeah. Right. Whereas I feel like there is probably a shift in the paradigm that more and more people would be like, oh, that's really cool. Tell me about that. Because I think the corporate language is starting to develop around it. But
and I'm almost ashamed to say this, but when I was starting to toy with the idea of like quitting my day job, if you will, I was more pressured than I'm willing to admit, from what people were going to think. Mm. And I was like, I have this good job. It looks so good on paper. Like, I'm a single guy. Like, if I'm dating and people like, oh, yeah, you're unemployed, basically. Like, there was a lot of like societal things that I thought people were going to be judgy about. But then once I did it and I was sort of just doing my own thing and loving every day, and like, instead of staying up till 3 a.m. playing video games, I was staying up till 3 a.m. working.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, this is who cares what other people think? This is amazing. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So that for me, that there was like that paradigm shift that I wish I would have reached sooner. Right. But yeah. Yeah. And I think that's more like to your point, like with our generation, like there's more people who just don't care what other people think as much, and are willing to sort of go out on their own and do what sort of makes them happy instead of just like working one place forever. You know, especially like my dad, he just retired recently. And he worked at Dell for like over 20 years.
Wow.
And he had a fantastic career. It was great. But also he pushed himself really hard and it was really stressful, and he worked really long hours and he, you know, did all this stuff. And, you know, at the end of the day, he like, you know, made good money and that sort of stuff. But I just remember, you know, growing up watching how busy he was. I was like, yeah, but like, do you regret, but like, you could have been having, and he's having the time of his life now.
Yeah.
But like, you could have been living. It's just different. I mean, we because of that, like, we had the opportunities to like, I grew up overseas. We lived overseas for six plus years. And so I had some incredible experiences that made me who I am and shaped me who I am. And it wouldn't have been without that opportunity and whatnot. And so, you know, there's a difference to it and there's some different advantages you get, but at the same time, I just see that. And I even see the position I was previously in, sitting at a desk, and I'm just like, man, like, I can't imagine that doing that for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
I only made it like a year and a half in the corporate world.
Yeah. that is what it is. I can appreciate like the guilt that you felt stepping away. And I definitely appreciate you sharing about like the societal pressure of how do you share these things? You know, as you and I were discussing before we started recording, as I've got more and more things that I'm starting to venture out into, and it's like, well, I've got Rusty Gates real estate, and then I've got Rusty Gates media, which is really behind this show, and now maybe some social media management. And
yeah,
I'm not entirely sure how to talk about that yet either. And it's, you know, it's part of it is not wanting to come off too braggadocious.
Sure.
Like, hey, yeah, man, I'm a videographer and a social media manager and I do this and I do that. And it's like, I don't know, I'm trying. like I want to be honest about the fact that it's like, I'm going to explore these opportunities and maybe something will come of it and maybe it won't. But at what right. point do I start like putting it on the business card or wearing it on a t-shirt, you know?
Right, right. And anytime somebody asks me like, hey, what's your, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'm like, yeah, right. Like, it's not that I'm a bad planner. It's just that I make the best and most informed decision at the time. And I can, yeah. I cannot look more than a year out. Like, yeah. you tell me what, because every time I look a year back, I'm like, no way I thought I would be here.
Yeah.
No way I thought I'd be doing this.
For sure.
I didn't think I was going to, I had always had the idea of quitting my day job and doing this full time, but it was always like 5 years out in my head. And then like from when I had that thought, like less than a year later, I'm doing it. And I'm like, well, this is a lot sooner than I thought I was going to do this. But it just feels right. And I would regret, the biggest thing was like, I would regret not doing this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's what my biggest driver was like, will I regret this?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would love to get to a point where like, I am just traveling around the country and going to events and promoting and just pushing this industry forward and helping other people get started with their businesses and that sort of stuff. And just,
yeah.
And just having somebody here to run this one and just sort of doing it on the back burner. Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. You could do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a matter of time. And I totally get that. It's the next right step and doing what you can in front of you. I mean, some of the video work has happened that way. Like, I didn't go out and start asking for people, hey, can I make videos for you? It was just people saw that I was making videos and said, hey, would you make a video for us? I'm like, yeah.
Right.
Will you pay me? And they were like, yeah. I was like, yes. Yeah. I would go glad.
Let's do it.
Yes. Let's do it. What, you mentioned, you know, you had this thought of wanting to do this full time. Now a year later, you're in it at least for a couple months full time and going to see what happens at the end of all this. What was the, in May, June, when you started thinking about, hey, I need sabbatical, I really want to focus on this. Was it the amount of work? Was it the income was providing enough stability that you could pull it off? Or what was
that's a great question. Yeah, there were probably 2 to 3 months where I was still working full time. And also we've been remote since since COVID started. And so I was working remote here and I was able just to sort of like pop down, help a customer do a tire change for 30 minutes on a one wheel and like provide these services or sell something to somebody or set them up with a rental. Like the operations aren't super time consuming, but you need to be there for it. Right. And so I'm not at the point where I can hire somebody and it makes sense. I still need to do things myself. But there was two factors. One was like the near future, seeing the possibility of having to go back into the office full time, especially how far away I live from, like, I'm like 30 to 40 minutes away. I can't just operate that. And if I wanted to look like a legitimate, consistent business, I can't have like no hours where you can come by, like, oh, come by on the night, like at nighttime.
For sure.
Like, that's sketchy and weird.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I am still flexible. People do need to come by night. I'm still available to it, which is great. But, so it was partly that. And then honestly, part of it was what I sort of like mentioned earlier, which is, needing to spend the time to push forward, you know, and expand and get and support events and go to these events. And at the end of this month, I'm going to be in Utah for a week for a one wheel racing event.
Yeah.
And so like, I need to be able to go to that. And I would have burned my vacation in like the first month. Right. So like the whole vacation thing, it doesn't work too. So, and that's part of the reason why I'm toying with the idea of going back part-time so much too, is because like, if I'm working part-time, you know, if I'm doing whatever a week and it's slow, I can work all my hours and then the next week just be off or travel or that sort of stuff. And so something that's remote and part-time is like the only way. But I'm also like, I'm grateful that I'm in a position to where I can still do that. I can work part-time and still run this. And so I can slowly transition. Unlike yourself, who was just like, right.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely just cut the cord and jumped feet first. and then completely wasted that time. Like it wasn't for the best. But it worked out.
It was a mental health month.
Yeah. I think somebody said that. Somebody was like, you've just been doing this for so long. Like, maybe you just needed to decompress. Like, that's a very nice way of putting it.
Right. That's what you'll tell yourself.
Yeah, so that's what I'll tell myself. Yeah. And be like, yeah, that's fine. I think the part-time thing is really interesting. One, because we're now seeing as people are coming out of COVID and offices are opening back up and how dramatic the demand is for remote working. First, I'm just going to say, it's really, I don't know if it's super reassuring that NASA allows spacesuit designers to work part-time and remote. That also feels like something that if there were any job that I'd be like, no, you need to be here and we need to see what you're doing. I feel like spacesuit designer is probably
right. I mean, there will still be times where I'll, for like hardware purposes and testing and that sort of stuff, that I will have to go into the office or the lab or whatever. But yeah, so like for the most part, like any sort of mechanical designer, you're basically just doing CAD drawings, that sort of stuff. And so you can, I mean, we've been doing it here operating remotely and we've been going down there just like cautiously when we need to for hardware and that sort of stuff. But for the most part, a lot of the work that we do is remote. And I get that too. Like, you know, anytime you do something remote and part-time, you're hindering your ability to move up, right? Which I'm totally fine with, right? Yeah. I was reluctant at first. I wasn't sure if I was fine with that because it's sort of you're making a decision, right?
Sure.
And so, but with that, like, I don't get to be like picky and choosy of what my job is going to be, right? So whatever position they have and whatever it's available and that sort of stuff, like, I'll happily do it. So
yeah,
they'll put me where they need to.
But I think, again, it sounds like as long as you have that kind of perspective going into it of saying, hey, I'm giving up the opportunity to climb this ladder really quickly and be picky and choosy about the work that I'm doing. For again, this freedom to do other things,
right?
I mean, that seems like a good trade-off. Oh, no, if you know what you're getting
absolutely
into.
Yeah,
because they'll need people. They're gonna, I mean, it's not anybody who could just walk up the street and just design that stuff. So let's go back to the licensees and all of these locations that you have across the country or that you're partnered with across the country. What does it take to become a licensee? What does that process look like?
Yeah. So basically it's a two-way interview process. So, we are basically trying to find, you know, industry leaders, in their city, that want to basically be like an advocate and and sort of push this industry forward. So we only, there's a bit of an exclusivity clause to it as well. So we're only going to sign on one location per city.
Okay.
And so, you know, at least for now, like the size of this industry, it's still growing and it's still small, it's still niche. And so, you know, for right now, it makes sense to just drive all the traffic to one spot and really promote that. And then in the future, if it grows, you know, they could maybe have satellite locations and, you know, if it starts booming crazy, you know, then I could have maybe like a location in Katy and that sort of stuff, but they'll all belong to like this LLC, not, you know, I won't, you know, Rent Eboards LLC won't be signing on new locations in that city, if that makes sense.
Got it.
And so, you know, we're trying to basically enable them because the more we help somebody else grow, the more it's going to help us grow ourselves. So that was one of the original drivers behind the franchise model or the license model was like, you know, if you're successful in your city, that's just going to help me. Right. And so it's that sort of stronger together thing. And, not only does it look good on the customer side and help promote brand awareness, but that there's also a back end side that too as well. And so we've made some brand partnerships, for suppliers and that sort of stuff. That I can tell you, we would not have been able to make if it was just me here in Houston,
local shop.
Right. And so we're able to do bigger things like that and hopefully continue to do so. And so, you know, in terms of what it takes, it just, you can't be one of them already in your city. We want to make sure that you're sort of like the industry leader. You're already doing stuff to, you know, really engage with the community. We're very community driven. So we host like events, we host like group rides, we do all that sort of stuff, you know, here in Houston and in all of our cities. And then we basically just work with you and we don't require a brick and mortar store, you know, especially starting off, you can just sort of start slow and grow into it.
And do some of those licensees, do they have brick and mortar stores?
Yeah, some of them do. There's actually two types of locations that we have. One is someone who's starting from the ground up. And so those are the ones we're really heavily involved with and help them, you know, hey, here's your contact for insurance. Here's your contact for like CPA. Here's how you do this. Here's some documentation, some tracking, how you can sort of run your business. And we help them very, very closely with that. And then the second type is somebody who already has a business, you know, in that city, and they're already started doing this, and maybe they already have a brick and mortar store. Maybe they're doing a little bit more than just, you know, the PEVs. And so we'll work with them, be like, hey, you're already sort of doing this. Like, if you join our network, here's some advantages. You can come in and you can, you know, and so there's sort of two aspects to that.
And they get the branding and all that. Cause that's what their licensing is, the name,
exactly,
the logo.
Exactly. Yeah. The website, that sort of like a lead generation service on that front as well.
So are you getting residuals from that, or is it a one-time fee that they're buying in?
It's actually a monthly flat fee.
Okay.
And so we don't take a percentage of revenue. We don't take a percentage of ownership of their LLCs. Every location is independently owned and operated LLC. And the reason for that is we're not, we're just trying to slow enable them to grow and be successful. We don't want to sort of like hinder that with, you know, oh, you know, we're going to take a percentage of this, or we're going to cut that here, there, that sort of stuff. So we basically, the parent company makes money on two fronts. One is the brand, the marketing fees, the branding fees and stuff, the license fees. And then the other side of it is actually like branding merchandise. So like print media, so like business cards and like t-shirts and like banners and like neon signs and like that sort of stuff. So anything, so we can control the brand, image and that sort of stuff. So we do those.
That's cool. The community aspect of e-boards and the scooters and all that is really interesting. This is an appropriate time for me to shout out my very good friend, Brian Beck, who is a one wheel enthusiast and rider. And he is very, very active up in DFW. I know he knows whoever runs the
Corbin
Rent e-boards. Yeah. So he knows, he's a part of all of that. He's got a whole course that, like, they have a pretty significant piece of land in their backyard, quote unquote, and he's got a trail, like,
that's awesome,
and a course with
like a pump ramps, track,
and all this stuff that he's got in his backyard. So Brian, I love you and you're awesome. But even just through him seeing, I think he exposed me to the real community aspect of all of this, is that people getting together and riding one wheels and boosted boards. That's like a real thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. Yeah. It's not as much in the scooter or e-bike stuff. Like, it is a little bit. And, you know, on all of our group rides, especially here in Houston, like, Houston's the most diverse city in the US. That definitely translates over to like personal electric vehicles as well.
Yeah.
And we see like all sorts of things here, which is great. But especially with the one wheels, that is the biggest factor on the one wheel in terms of community. It has the strongest community, more so than, you know, I was originally part of the boosted community because that was my first, you know, electric. Nothing compares to the one wheelers. Like, we're literally traveling across the country, and I have incredibly, incredibly good friends that I've only met through the events and that sort of stuff when we meet up, you know, a couple times a year. And I say like, oh, a couple times a year, as if we've been in this forever, but like, it's all still so new. Like, this is the first year where the big one wheel race, there's actually qualifying events for it. And so there were like three qualifiers across the US, and then in Utah in this month is where I'm going up to the actual like final event. And so like, it's all still new, and it's all still unfolding and happening right in front of our faces. And so, it's just so exciting to see like the community grow, and what becomes of it, and just how tight knit it becomes.
Yeah.
Because it is still like, it's a niche enough, like an e-bike and an e-scooter is like instant gratification. You get on it, you learn how to use it like in 10 seconds, and you're like, this is cool, I'm having fun. And it's, you can rip around on it. With the one wheels, there's a bit of a learning curve. And people are intimidated by it. And that's part of the reason, like, why we're here is with all the rentals is like a free lesson. Like, come in, we'll teach you how to use it. We'll spend like 30 minutes with you if we need to, and get you comfortable and whatnot. And so we're trying to like bring that to sort of everybody. But because there's a learning curve and because they are kind of expensive, the community is pretty tight, and there's a little bit, there's still a barrier to get into the community. Like almost in a good way, to where the really committed people like are willing to do whatever, and they're willing to travel, and they're willing to do all this stuff. And so, and build skate parks in their backyard and, you know, that sort of stuff. One of our guys, you know, one of the leaders here in the local Houston One Wheel Crew community, Peter Friesen, he basically bought, you know, spent a healthy chunk of money on Fresh Park, which is like this pop-up skate park thing that products. And so he basically has a whole like skate park that he'll just deploy on like rooftop parking garages and that sort of stuff. And we'll do like these pop-up events and whatnot. Gnarly Nomads is this company that he's basically started that does rentals for of these of these like skate parks. So then for like events for just not even like personal electric vehicles, but just like skaters can go like rent like for birthday parties or whatever. They can just rent a skate park to pop up in their backyard, which is really cool. Having that in like the One Wheel community as well, like really helps too. So when we host events, he'll like bring the skate park here and pop it up in our driveway and just rip around. And yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, it does sound like the barrier of entry is a part of it. Is that like you obviously, as we said, the price point on some of these on the Nexar could be $2,000, $2,500 if you decide to kit it out and all of that. And then you actually have to learn how to ride the thing. But it sounds like if you want to learn, like you can learn how to move around.
Yeah, it's easier than learning how to, like especially like the electric longboards. Like an electric longboard is easier to learn how to use than a longboard.
Okay.
Right? Because you get your feet planted in your carving like stable position and then use a remote to accelerate and to brake.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't need to foot brake. You don't need to balance on one foot. You don't need to do any of that. You just go. Right. And with the one wheels, you sort of stand and then you get, you know, you use these sort of like, you look like a baby deer for 5 minutes and then you get it. And it just locks, it ingrains in your head. I've never seen somebody not get it. So you just need to do it. Just try something new and it just looks intimidating, but it's way easier than it looks.
Yeah. That's really cool. I'm excited. And I know Brian has wanted me for a very long time to start riding and he seems to suspect that once I get into it, that will be my life. So probably. Yep. So
maybe that's almost a deterrent. This thing's so good. Your life will like, this will be your life.
This is it.
Of course, I'm a bad person to talk to about that.
Sure, a little biased.
A little biased.
Yeah. Well, and you should buy a house, and we'll all have a good weekend. You guys, you mentioned you guys sponsor Dominique Williams.
Yeah.
Is that right? How does that happen? How does it work? How much does it cost for me to sponsor somebody if I wanted to sponsor a professional rider?
So it's There's a lot of different sponsorship types of things in this industry. A lot of people will do stuff like, you know, provide flights to events and like lodging and like that, those sort of sponsorships or there's monthly stipends. You know, sponsorship can look in like money different ways. So Dominique's the first, you know, professional rider that we've sponsored. He's a great guy who just has a stupid amount of talent. Like you just see him on a board, and he's just, he just sends it. He just sends it wherever he is. He looks at the world like his playground for one wheels and he's just always pushing the limits of what the one wheel is sort of capable of. No amount of like destructive testing, future motion, the manufacturer one wheel could have possibly done to like realize that these things could live up to Dominique Williams. But apparently they can.
Yeah.
And the capacity and like the market and like a lot of like the behind the scenes numbers of sponsorships is still so very new. And we're sort of like, it's one of those things that we're just sort of figuring out as we go, what exactly that looks like. I mean, we've contracts and that sort of stuff, but
yeah. And did you have to hire lawyers for that? Or were there templates you found online to get your contract?
With everything, you know, everything starts with a Googled template, right? And then eventually you hire a lawyer and they're like, oh, that was some money that's just gone.
To protect you so that you don't lose a lot more money
later
down the road. I haven't quite gotten to that spot yet, but I definitely spent some time on Google contracts and like trying to figure in piecemeal like a Frankenstein's monster of contracts together for videography work. And be like, well, that makes sense. And this makes sense. But yeah. It's probably awful.
Yeah. I'm actually in the middle right now of, we just started with my lawyer. We just started the trademark process for our logo.
Yeah.
Part of the trademark thing is you basically have to show that it's established and that it is related to you. Especially with things like the word rent and e-boards, like those, it's very generic and it's by that it is that by design. Because we're trying to optimize for like SEO and people Googling stuff. Right. Yep. So we wanted rents in our name, even though we're much more than rentals. That's where we get the introduction to the market is like somebody wants to try it. So they want to rent it. Then we capture them and convert them into sales and services. But we want the name to still to be that initial customer facing thing. The logo has been in use for, you know, 5 or so years. And so that's enough time to basically establish that as as ownership, and we've used it enough to where now it's time to, we can actually trademark it. So we're starting that process, but speaking of like lawyer fees and stuff.
Oh no, that's like a very real thing that, I mean, has to be done and cost some money. And have you had any issues with that, with competition?
Oh, no, I haven't had any issues with somebody like trying to use our logo and not be us. But as we grow, like we just hit 9 locations. We're looking at double digits now. Like we're trying to expand out, and we just want to sort of make sure that, you know, on a couple of fronts, one, that, you know, that the logo is, you know, only being used by the licensees. And then two, that, the licensees are using it appropriately. Right. They're not like, you know, we have a style guide and like colors and like branding and, you know, this sort of stuff. And we give them the logo files, to use for like digital content and stuff. Cause it's a lot easier to, you know, make that match the style guide. But for any sort of like products and like t-shirts and that sort of stuff, there's a standard, and that's why like all that has to be purchased through us. And so being able to control that as well, there's some legal jargon associated with that.
At what point in the process did you get a style guide made and fonts and colors and logos?
I had a style guide from the beginning, but the style guide I have now is much better. I don't know if you've seen the animation on our home screen, on our splash screen, but I basically have this. So I had an animation made a couple years ago that is just the animation of the logo that has some skateboards that fly by, and then it ends in the logo. And now I have it such that it's more inclusive. So it starts with like a one wheel, and then you see like an e-bike and a scooter and a skateboard and a one wheel, all that sort of stuff. And then it ends on the same logo. And so when I had that logo done, I hired somebody for that, animation. And then I also was like, hey, can you like update my style guide while you're at it with all these colors that we're using and that sort of stuff. And so, and like all the new icons we're using and whatnot. So
How did you know that you needed that to begin with, or where did you pick that up? Right. I mean, mechanical engineering and working for NASA and all that, but then it sounds like you start off pretty strong with a brand identity and all of that. Where did you pick up that?
Yeah. So the brand identity was sort of there. And it was, and I could see the potential of implementing it, but it just wasn't really implemented yet. And so, and also, you know, the industry maybe wasn't ready for it at that time. And so I basically, when I purchased the branding and the logo and that sort of stuff. And then I rebuilt the website from the ground up. I, you know, revamped all this sort of stuff, did an animation, then started just doing it like taking it more seriously and that sort of stuff. And then it sort of just built from there. And then at that point it was just like, oh, next logical steps here, there. And then also one of the advantage, to like having multiple people using the same branding, like we talked about Corbin earlier, who runs our DFW location. He's great. Like he absolutely like sees the whole potential, and obviously he's signed on, but, he's great for also like, hey, we should think about doing this. I think this could be beneficial to all of our locations. And I'm like, yes, that's great. And so we're all sort of doing the same thing in our cities, but at the same time, we're also like, sure, I may be the final decision maker because I own the company, but like we're all stakeholders and we all have opinions and great ideas and that sort of stuff. So, and you know, you're better together, like in that sense as well, of just like ideas and bouncing stuff off each other. And so, that's an advantage that I didn't really think about, you know, initially. I was like, oh yeah, all these other people who are literally the same mindset that I'm doing the exact same thing. They have all these great ideas as well that maybe I didn't think of that we can implement. And so we're just seeing like, I think we're just going to see all the little things just improve and whatnot. And so a lot of that's like the back end tools and that sort of stuff to, you know, move away. Ideally, we're moving away from like Google Docs and spreadsheets to actual like pieces of software and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Is where a lot of the back end stuff that I'd like to see improve and whatnot. But just developing tools to make it easier. And then, you know, when it's said and done, it was already pretty easy. It's already pretty easy to start one of these businesses, you know, because we've already figured it all out. You just say, hey, I want to do it. We're like, all right, here's what needs to be done. You need to do this, then this, then this. And there's some aspects that are still tedious. And our goal eventually is to make those fully seamless and make it just stupid easy to sort of do all that stuff.
Just automated.
Yeah.
I've been to San Antonio a handful of times in the last few years. And, you know, they have a much more vibrant, let's say, scooter like rental. I don't know what you would call the drop off. Pick it up.
The distributed fleet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. Like you're, birds and limes. And
yeah.
Sort of
yeah. And you're just like over by the Alamo and there's a bukus of scooters,
right.
Which it seems like there's very mixed reviews on.
Right. Right. That Houston actually banned them. And so there's in the demand's still there. So Instead of that, there's been a bunch of, in the East downtown area, there's been a bunch of like independent brick and mortar scooter shops that have just popped up, whether it's a van or they're just renting a really, really tiny space. And then they're just basically using the sidewalk and people just like walk up with nightlife. And then they're just running like, you know, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, even Sunday night. And then they just sort of rent out the scooters to people who just literally drive to downtown, rent scooters, ride around, have a good time, that sort of stuff. And so that market is absolutely there. And I do have scooters to rent, but that business model is very different than ours. The reason I have the scooters and the e-bikes, like those sort of things that are easier to learn how to use or easier to use, that anybody could sort of do it. The main driver behind that is we have somebody who wants to come and, you know, rent an electric skateboard or rent a one wheel, but they're with somebody who's not comfortable in there and who doesn't want to rent those and doesn't want to try those or something. Oftentimes that looks like a spouse or a friend or even a kid, right?
Yeah.
These will enable us to continue pushing what we really care about forward and that sort of stuff. But from a business perspective, like there's scooter shops all over the place. And so clearly there's money there sort of to be made. But
Well, in figuring out your niche and figuring out what you're going to say yes to and what you're going to say no to and saying, you know, you can't do everything. Because I think that's where I saw it most recently here in town was I went to an Astros game and there was like a van parked up and they just had like a billion scooters set up on the thing. And
I mean, it's profitable. Like if you're in this game just to make a bunch of money, like right now, like those are popular and you could do it, get a band, do it. Like it makes sense. You could totally do it. It would take 100% of my time.
Sure.
I'd make more money probably, but that's not what I'm about. I'm trying to grow the slow and steady. I'm trying to grow a long lasting community. I spend a lot of time hosting events and like doing that sort of stuff and just trying to, you know, enable and grow our local community. And and it's just a blast.
Absolutely. Well, and again, you talk about building the community, building relationships, like people who get a scooter off from a guy out of back of a van, like,
right, they're just gonna have a
they're swiping
for an
their
hour,
credit card gonna, they don't care about the guy in the van,
right, or the scooter, they're gonna trash it. Like people take care of my products because it's very personal rental experience. You know, I spend time with them, I teach them how to use them, like, hey, here's what you do, here's this, here's that, and they think like, oh, this isn't that scooter shop's scooter, oh, this is Jake's scooter, like I don't want to trash this thing. And so it's much more personal, and I hardly ever have damages to my products, to my rental products, so people like are not trashing them.
Yeah.
Which is great. And I think it's because of the personable aspect of it.
For sure. You mentioned insurance, like helping your licensees set up insurance. It feels like insurance would be a large part of your business. Even if you are having people sign liability waivers.
Right.
It feels like there's an inherent risk.
Yeah. The insurance company is actually who provides the liability waiver.
Okay.
So like that's like, hey, have them sign this waiver. This is what we'll back you up on type thing. The insurance is for like liability insurance. That there are a shockingly few number of options across the US for this type of businesses for insuring.
Interesting.
For liability. It's like almost a monopoly, which sucks.
Yeah.
And I end up spending a lot more money than I would like to. But it is still a scaled cost. So, you know, when you're first starting off, it's not unbearable and it can still work. But it's definitely a cost, something to consider. It's not like buying a bunch of boards because those are assets. They have value, right? With insurance, like you're covering your ass, but it's down, money's gone,
yeah,
right?
You're not getting a return on that.
Yeah. You're not getting a return. You're getting the opposite. It's protection, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. But yeah, insurance is definitely a big thing.
So what we need is we need a more approachable and a more human e-board rental insurance company.
Yeah. If you're an insurance company out there and you want to offer us some good insurance, I've literally been in operation for 5 years and I've never had an issue. Like anytime somebody does like fall and hurt themselves, they're like, they show up to my shop like, dude, check out my wounds. These are sick. Like, they're like happy about it. And
sure.
I'm like, I don't know. Maybe that's not the right, but they're like, they understand. Like,
yeah.
And we give them training. We tell them like, hey, here's how this product works. Here's how you can get hurt. Don't do this. And sometimes they'll come back and like, you said, don't do it, but I did it. And I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, helmets are included with all rentals, you know, that sort of stuff. And so if somebody has their own helmet, we've got an extra form that they sign that says I'm good. I don't need a helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's cool for you to share just a little bit about that because a lot of times when I get to talk with people and sit down like this and hear about their businesses, I will come across, I will hear the thing that kept, that keeps me out of that game. There's really? there's a lot of reasons why I'm not going to do what you're doing. There's many.
The insurance is a huge deterrent for a lot of people. I've talked to so many people and they're like, yeah, but insurance. And I'm like, yeah, but it's doable. Like here, we've done it 9 times. Like it works. Like we can do it. And so, but yeah, people are just, and a lot of it, like finding a license, a licensee can be very challenging because they need to be, even though they don't need a storefront, they need to be centrally located, right? Relatively to the city. They need to be, they need to be in the right place to start a business with them. They can be passionate about it, but maybe they just don't have the finances or the connections, or they can't make it work that way. Or maybe they don't, they just don't have the space for it. Or, you know, maybe they just had a kid and like don't have the time for it. Or, you know, I've had people who are like, I'm about to get married. I just can't do this right now. I just, you know, and so there's a lot that goes into it to find. And so finding somebody who's A, the right person in the right location and who's, you know, it's the right time for them and for their city, like all that has to sort of line up. So it can be very challenging to sort of find the right person. And part of that is like, the reason I tied that is because they have to be in the right position is also part of that is like their risk tolerance. They have to be, you know, an appropriate amount of risk tolerance. And I might be in a point in my life where I'm willing to take more risk than, than normal. But, and an LLC in Texas is pretty good. Like you're pretty protected with an LLC in Texas. So, I've never been so worried about that sort of stuff, but I could be like stupidly naive and just I've never had a problem. So I like feel like I'm legally and like vulnerable, like invincible right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It could be part of it.
Well, yeah, we'll knock on wood and say that's not going to, you won't test that theory at all. But I mean, I've said it again and again that I do think that you have to have a little bit of that naivety to do anything.
To do it. Yeah.
Yeah. You just have to, you can't really know all of the risks and all of the potential falls that are going to happen. Because if you fully knew, like, you'd be like, why would I do this?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's like anything in life. If you understood how freaking hard it was going to be when you're at the worst in like so deep that you are so deep, you can't back out anymore.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't do anything. You would just sit on your ass and just like watch TV. Cause that's the easiest thing. Like if you knew how hard things got, you wouldn't do it. And so I think I mentioned this offline, but I have this like piece of paper that I basically printed out that says that has the phrasing, start before you think you're ready. And then I printed it on like a shitty piece of paper and just taped it with Scotch tape, like crooked on my wall, above my desk. And so like intentionally such that it doesn't look like I thought it through. Like I was like, oh yeah, like let's just do it. And so I use that for inspiration when I'm like working at my desk and whatnot. So
yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, how can people find you? What do you want to share with anybody that might be listening, might be interested in checking this out?
Yeah. So if the idea of like electric skateboarding, like even tickles your fancy, if that sounds cool to you, like check us out. It's Rent eBoards everywhere. You know, just like it sounds, it's just Rent and then E and then boards. RentEBoards.com is our website. And then, yeah, that tag can find us anywhere.
Well, I think that you built something really special here and it's really cool to see that it's started while it kind of has some roots in NYC, that it really has spread out from here in Houston. And, I think you've got great things in your future and, I'll probably come buy a one wheel from you pretty soon. So thanks, man. We'll push people your way.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Pleasure.
A huge thank you to Jake and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment to find Jake on Instagram at IamTheJaker, J-A-K-E-R, or at Rent eBoards, where you can check out all of the scooters, boards, and one wheels available for you to rent and try out yourself. I'm so thoroughly impressed by what he's built and by the care he shows each and every customer, helping them get out and explore the city in new ways. I kid you not when I say that the one wheel scene is a very real community, and I can't wait to join it myself. If this is your first time listening to Houston Made, I'd absolutely recommend that you go check out some of our other episodes with guests from all kinds of industries, ranging from education to the food industry, podcasting to photography. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I'm looking to do some Facebook Live, Instagram Live sessions with some of our guests, so be on the lookout for that in the next month or so. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends.
Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.